Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson. We love guitars.
The attorneys at Gingrich, Thompson, and Wachs have had the honor of receiving numerous awards for their work both in and outside the courtroom. But just as important as receiving accolades for being skilled attorneys, it's equally important to give back to the community in which they live and work. If you want a personal attorney that can help you in so many different areas, they've got them. They're in Eau Claire, Madison, Milwaukee, and Waukesha. They're easy to reach. GTWLawyers.com. That's GTWLawyers.com. Welcome to another edition of Sly's Office.com, brought to you by the Operating Engineers, Local 139, also Madison Firefighters, Local 311, Madison Teachers Incorporated, and Madison Teamsters, Local 695. John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation joins us. Comrade, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
Actually, it's morning, but who's counting, right?
I was actually being polite.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, whatever. So we have quite an interesting situation where it turns out the Republican Party, the war that's going on is kind of a proxy war between two women, Liz Cheney and Marjorie Taylor Greene. Kind of interesting, isn't it?
It is. Although I always remind people, let's not be too certain that they're so different. Okay. There's something happening here where you're sort of setting up Liz Cheney as the virtuous one, right, or the truth teller, or whatever, and Marjorie Taylor Greene as a particularly awful and dangerous one. Let's accept that Marjorie Taylor Greene is in fact awful and dangerous, right? But let's also understand that Liz Cheney is a lying, conspiracy-minded, right-wing, extremist, warmongering, neoconservative who got one thing right, not some sort of heroic figure. And let's also remember that Liz Cheney, after she was given her, you know, absolution and allowed to remain in the leadership of the Republican caucus last week, one of her first acts was to vote to sustain Marjorie Taylor Greene's position, i.e. to defend Marjorie Taylor Greene's committee positions. So Liz Cheney was right about impeachment and wrong about everything else.
I think I disagree with you.
I can accept that, but yeah, You're going to be wrong on this one.
Well, I'm not making her out to be a hero, but I do think there are other times where she has stood up during the Trump years and has raised red flags about his behavior. She should have during impeachment, but I don't think you can short sell what she has done right now. I think it's
not short selling it, but it is being, you know, use it completely. Yeah. Use it comfortably. Her statement was great, that Donald Trump, you know, as she said, the president of the United States summoned the mob, assembled the mob, and lit the flame. No doubt about that. It was a betrayal, unquestionably enough. But let us also remember, right, that it wasn't Marjorie Taylor Greene who called Democrats, quote, the party of anti-Semitism, the party of infanticide, the party of socialism. That was Liz Cheney. It wasn't Marjorie Taylor Greene who announced that socialists had a chokehold on the Democratic platform on Joe Biden's policies going forward. That was Liz Cheney. It wasn't Marjorie Taylor Greene who alleged that because John Kerry was involved in putting together the UN's 2015 Joint Comprehensive Plan for Action for Nonproliferation, that he had, quote, given the Iranians a pathway towards a nuclear weapon and was the architect, her words, of Iranian nuclear power. It wasn't Marjorie Taylor, that was Liz Cheney. It wasn't Marjorie Taylor Greene who claimed that Kamala Harris sounded like Karl Marx. That was
Liz Cheney. All right,
But
it wasn't Marjorie Taylor Greene,
okay,
who suggested that Harris supported infanticide. That was Liz Cheney.
Is Liz Cheney an extremist Republican? Absolutely. But I do think we have to draw lines at, let's face it, we have people that we're aligned with politically that have used some pretty charged rhetoric themselves. I do think, because we are talking about an insurrection at the Capitol, and that being the line, we can draw lines in different places, that this is a pretty unique situation. Let me play a clip here of Marjorie Taylor Greene, who clearly is very ambitious and maybe not as dumb as people think. Here's a clip of Marjorie Taylor Greene.
I'm fine with being kicked off of my committees because it'd be a waste of my time. You know who I am. I'm a very hard worker, and I'm proud of it. So now I have a lot of free time on my hands, which means I can talk to a whole lot more people all over this country. I'm going to be holding the Republican Party accountable and pushing them to the right.
Marjorie Taylor.
Okay, so this woman is maneuvering for power out of this whole thing. She appears to be getting juice out of all this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no question of that. And remember, when the vote came to hold her to account in the House of Representatives, they got only 11 Republicans to vote to do it, right? I mean, the vast majority of the Republican caucus was willing to keep her on her committees, was unwilling to hold her to account in any way, right? And so she knows her position now. She understands the Republican Party better than the Republican Party understands itself. And you know who the last person like that was? Donald Trump.
Donald Trump, right.
That's right. In 2015, or even in before that, when he was doing all the lies about Obama as regards citizenship and things of that nature, Trump understood that you could mobilize the Republican base using hate, right? Using lies, conspiracy theories, hatred. And initially, when he came along, all of the prominent leaders of the Republican Party, Scott Walker, Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, all these people, they sort of laughed him off, and they said, we'll be able to deal with him, right? That'll be easy. And the pundits generally did as well. And then Trump proceeded to prove them all wrong. And this is the thing to understand about Marjorie Taylor Greene. I don't think that she's got quite the traction, or perhaps will have quite the traction that Trump did. But she is the latest figure, along with, I hate to say, Josh Hawley, to understand the Republican Party better than it understands itself.
So is everything in the current Republican Party about a reaction? In other words, it's almost like a child being defiant against a parent reflexively.
Well, it's not reaction. It's recognition, and this is sort of a difficult reality for the Republican Party, but one that they have to face down. The Republican Party, ever since it stopped trying to be a mainstream party, which you can kind of chart to the 1970s, roughly.
I can tell you exactly when it happened.
Go ahead.
It was Ronald Reagan was on the ropes in the primaries against Gerald Ford, and Jesse Helms saved him.
Yep. Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth in that, and I would trace it to around that period. But this key thing, this concept that they stopped trying to compete in the mainstream of ideas, and they decided that they were going to kind of scope out their own territory. Well, what they did was a twofold thing. They sold out completely to big business, and it's important to understand that Republicans in the 50s and 60s were actually quite willing to regulate business and sometimes got ahead of the Democrats on it, particularly on some environmental issues and some civil liberties issues. So they sold out completely to big business. They were for privatization, against regulation, against taxes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That, in the United States, realistically would get them about 5% of the vote. right? It was a loser proposition, but it got them the money to run their campaigns. And then they had to have another calculus, and their other calculus was that they went to the extreme right on social issues and developed out Nixon's Southern strategy and, frankly, you know, a lot of racist and xenophobic approaches as regards domestic and even some international issues. So that this combination was total sellout to big business, to the very wealthy, and a ideological outreach to extremes on social and basically on a host of social issues, but also on issues of race and xenophobia. The people who were the base, right, particularly those who wanted, simply voted Republican against their own interests economically because they really wanted the Republican Party to ban abortion or to keep immigrants out or to do something like that, they were always subtly aware that the leadership of the party was selling them out, right? That the leadership of the party would, you know, reap their votes at election time, but often not deliver on, you know, the campaign promises. And so then along comes a Donald Trump, and he says, he points to the other Republicans. He says, they haven't given you what you wanted. They haven't delivered for you. I will on abortion, banning abortion, things of that nature. And then you have somebody again, like a Marjorie Taylor Greene, saying much the same thing. The Republican Party is always vulnerable to this because they made a devil's bargain years ago. And so the leadership of that party is always vulnerable to an attack.
Well, you throw in the internet and, you know, some of the world forces that are going on, and it only makes it worse. Here is Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse.
You are welcome to censure me again, but let's be clear about why this is happening. It's because I still believe, as you used to, that politics isn't about the weird worship of one dude. The party could purge Trump skeptics, but I'd like to convince you that not only is that civic cancer for the nation, it's just terrible for our party.
All right. Your thoughts on that?
Well, it's interesting. Using the term, I'm always a little bit intrigued by Ben Sasse's sort of hipster terminology. You know, does he sound a little bit like he stepped out of, you know, like a Jeff Spicoli party or something? You know, I mean, it's...
Yes, whenever I think of Jeff Spicoli, I think of Ben Sasse, yeah.
Or, you know, like Bill and Ted. You know, it's like, it's kind of, I don't know why...
Wasn't he a chancellor at a college? He probably picked that up from the kids.
I guess he did. Yeah. You know, the cool young senator who could talk to the young. But with that said, basically his point's well taken. And the interesting thing is that that we're seeing a number of Republicans, particularly I think some of the younger Republicans who are stepping up, Adam Kinzinger being another example, and saying, okay, fully recognize we are now in a fight for the soul of this party, right? This is going to be a real fight. There's no question of that. And I've decided to take this side, knowing that I may lose. And it's interesting that when you listen to an Adam Kinzinger, when you listen to a Ben Sasse, I think there is a consciousness of that, and I think that's healthy. That's how you fight a battle, you know, with the energy that's required. That's one of the reasons why early on when you bring up Liz Cheney, I'm a little dubious about her, because I'm not sure she's really willing to fight that fight. I think she is ready to fight the fight to get beyond Trump, okay? And that's a good thing, and there's no question. That's a real fight, and I give her credit for that. I'm not sure that she's ready to fight the fight to get beyond crazy.
Well, she does represent Wyoming. May live in Virginia, but she does represent Wyoming.
And she also is, in fact, you know, a political careerist who hasn't been in Congress that long. But you know, I mean, look, she's been around politics her whole life. And this is the route she has chosen. She wants to be on this route. And she's trying to achieve two things right now that are fascinating. One, she's trying to maintain a place in the Republican Party, right, as a principled Republican. She desperately doesn't want to become John McCain, right? She doesn't want to be John McCain. She wants to be something, she wants to be a figure who's split with Trump, but is still in touch with most of the base of the party. And I don't know that she's going to be able to thread that needle. I actually think it's going to be really hard. But that is very different than somebody saying, we got to get the crazies out of this party. And, you know, Kinzinger, as an example, Adam Kinzinger from Illinois, who's in a two-year House term, very vulnerable, he cast the vote for impeachment and cast the vote to throw Green off her committees. That's a consistent position, right? That's very different from where Cheney is. And I only belabor it because I think this gets us to one of the most fascinating things as regards the Republican Party. It's starting to develop factions, right? And, you know, groupings, you know, kind of different groupings that are going to be in play in different ways. There's a cult of personality around Trump, which will rise or fall based on what Trump does. But then beyond that, there is, you know, clearly, you know, a mainstream faction, you know, a fight for the soul of the party faction, and a Marjorie Taylor Greene faction, a Josh Hawley, I think a Josh Hawley faction that's developing. I think he's aggressively running for president. So the Republican Party, weirdly enough, becomes really interesting. I mean, for those of us who step back and want to take a serious look at it.
We'll be back with John Nichols from the Capital Times at slysoffice.com.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep slysoffice.com up and going so you keep up to date, whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from slysoffice.com.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
We're back at slysoffice.com, brought to you by Madison Computer Works and Jeff's Guitar Clinic. So before we get into some of the things that are going on with the COVID relief package, I want to ask you about what happened at CNN. Excuse me, on Fox Business over the weekend, where they abruptly pulled Lou Dobbs off the air. Let me play this from CNN.
Number news, Lou Dobbs Tonight, which happens to be the highest rated show on the network Fox Business, is suddenly canceled. Dobbs, who peddled and encouraged false theories of election fraud all the way through this saga, has also been named, along with two other Fox hosts, in a $2.7 billion election lawsuit this week. Our chief media correspondent, Brian Stelter, joins me now. Brian, can you remember a network ever canceling its highest rated show?
This is exceedingly rare, Aaron. The closest thing to it is when Fox News fired Bill O'Reilly when his secret history of sexual harassment settlements was revealed. There's no sign of that with Dobbs. Instead, it's Dobbs' extreme content that is the issue and his weakness with advertisers. Of course, he was a sycophant for President Trump, one of Trump's biggest boosters on TV. And now there's less use for that. Trump issuing a statement tonight praising Dobbs, saying he is and was great. He had a large and loyal following that'll be watching closely for his next move. And that following includes me. But you know what? Dobbs is not going to be seen anywhere anytime soon. Fox is sitting him on the bench. They're going to pay him to stay off TV for the time being.
Wow, it's just pretty incredible.
So is this beginning of something? Obviously, these lawsuits have shaken Fox and some of these other networks to the core. You've seen My Pillow guy getting cut off, you know, on television. This disinformation network has really done a lot of damage to democracy in America. Do you think this is the beginning of something bigger?
It could be, and that's an interesting thing. You see, this stuff hasn't been litigated, right? We've got the lawsuits; they're in play. What we're going to see is whether at some point a judge says, you were wrong and the law is on the side of those who are suing, or whether a judge says, no, you know, there's a very broad space for comment, even where that comment may be lunacy, right? I think there's a possibility that it could take us someplace, but we don't know exactly where. And Fox is, in to my mind, making its choices based on that uncertainty and also based on the fact that Donald Trump is no longer in office and in a position to protect this right-wing media infrastructure. And that's an important thing to understand. One of the least covered shifts that has occurred since Trump lost and Biden came into office is that the Federal Communications Commission, no longer, led by Trumpites who are, determined to basically help build out this right-wing media infrastructure. And there's a lot of other shifts taking place as well. So I just think that Fox is reacting to a very uncertain moment. And also, they might, and if I dare, step back and think, that media companies have many interests. One is to protect their strength, their base, whatever. But they also have an interest in kind of getting ahead of the next twists, the next curves. And my sense is that there may be folks at Fox, in the leadership at Fox, who are wondering whether they want to forever be the network of angry old people.
You mean like Ron Johnson?
The angrier and older than Ron Johnson. But Ron Johnson being the young, hip whippersnapper of that crowd. But you understand what I'm saying is that they may be looking down the line and saying, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, do we really want to be the dead enders hanging on to this ideological position, which is so based on lies, so based on conspiracy theories, or might we want to move on to something else? And Dobbs is sort of, even though the most popular on that particular network, kind of the face of that.
Yeah, well, that isn't a highly rated network. He's like the tall munchkin on that network.
Well, he was put in sort of a kind of purgatory, right?
Yes.
He was moved out of the big zone, big leagues, and moved down to that spot, and was comfortable there. And it's just that now he's more of a burden, perhaps, not just legally and financially, but potentially as regards the long-term definition of the Fox brand. And so I think there's a lot going on there. It's a very interesting story.
Regarding the stimulus package.
Yeah.
COVID relief bill, whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
This is Debbie Dingell yesterday, Congresswoman from the Detroit area, talking about the package.
Very concerned about, we don't know the details. Again, people are still speculating. We're in, the old saying, people with weak stomachs shouldn't watch sausage or laws being made. But the fact of the matter is, I have people that work at the University of Michigan that have been lab assistants whose income was much higher a year ago and they're making zero now. And yet it's based on a taxable level. We need to figure out how we are really helping those that need help. And when it comes to the minimum wage, I'm going to be one of the loudest screamers about it. The fact of the matter is, if you look at who has kept us together these last almost a year now since COVID hit, it's people we haven't thought were worth paying $15 an hour. We need to pay people what their worth is, and their worth in this society means they should be paid a minimum wage that keeps them below the poverty line.
All right, two things there. First thing, when we are using 2019 wages to hand out money in this package, that can be a real misnomer. There are people that, even cut hair at barbershops or high-end salons that were making a really good living in 2019.
Absolutely.
That aren't in 2020. And by the way, I also suggest if you're not getting your haircut right now, send some money to your barber, right?
That's right.
So we can't just use 2019 numbers to determine who gets cash.
You are so right. That is, you're getting to the heart of the matter here. And look, our Republican friends, particularly our so-called, center-right or reasonable Republican friends,
Pat Toomey.
Yeah. Susan Collins, yeah. Right? You know, they're often the most dangerous people in Congress, right? Because they're not stupid. They want to impact governance, and they want to impact it away from a functional governance that really is, it would effectively reward the Democratic Party ultimately for having dealt with big problems. And so they're always sort of trying to, you know, bring a little austerity to the argument, bring a little deficit hawk, you know, crisis language to the thing, and that's what they've done. And what have they attacked? They've attacked the minimum wage. They don't want that there. You got some Democrats that are willing to accept that, cutting that out apparently. And then they've also attacked the $2,000 payments, which are not really even $2,000 payments because they're, you know, kind of, it's been bifurcated by the 600 versus 1400 numbers. But this is, you're so totally right that what the Democrats should be standing for here, kind of at the, you know, once we've gotten done with getting the kind of three touchstones, which are make sure we've got enough money for health care, make sure we've got enough money to do the vaccine, make sure we can bail out state and local governments so they can continue to function in this crisis moment. Once you've done that, then, you know, there's no question that they should be fighting with everything they've got for a minimum wage increase and for the $2,000 payments. And those $2,000 payments should not go, they shouldn't be means tested. They shouldn't go, you know, only to people who are in the most quantifiably dire circumstance, right? Because, A, as you say, the numbers can be deceiving. We may not actually know who's in the worst of circumstances. But, B, it's also, why if you're trying to prove that government can be useful, right, that it can actually work, that it can actually do things, which I think is what many of the Republicans really fear, you know, why if you're trying to do that as a Democrat, would you say, yeah, but we're not going to do it for the working class. We're not going to do it for the middle class. You know, we're not going to say that, yeah, it's totally fine to use the $2,000 to, you know, pay down your credit card debt, to pay your student loan, to do things that get you ahead or at least get you even in this moment. That's great. There's nothing wrong with that. And that doesn't in any way diminish our absolute commitment to those who are in the most vulnerable positions. Of course, they come first. And yes, we absolutely make sure that we get them the resources they need and the protection they need. But why would you deny resources and protection to the working class and the middle class?
One more clip.
What the next few days will show.
What you're hearing from Republicans is the size of the package, that it's just too big. And it's not just Republicans saying that. Larry Summers, NEC Director for President Obama, Treasury Secretary for President Clinton, argued this week that it's too big, the economy doesn't need it. And then he added this. He said if the stimulus proposal is enacted, Congress will have committed 15% of GDP with essentially no increase in public investment to address these challenges. After resolving the coronavirus crisis, how will political and economic space be found for the public investments that should be the nation's highest priority? What he's arguing is that what we're going to put at risk is the ambitious infrastructure investment you're pushing as transportation secretary.
All right. We don't really need to play Pete Buttigieg's response to that. Let's just talk about Larry Summers. Not surprising that he would be the fly in the ointment.
Yep. He's always wrong. I mean, you can count on him. Larry Summers and Rahm Emanuel will always show up to tell a Democratic administration to do less and to do the wrong thing, right? That's a consistent, absolute certainty. To Biden's credit, neither of these guys are getting a paycheck out of the Biden administration at this point. But that doesn't mean that they're going to go away, right? They're going to keep pushing and keep looking for ways to influence this administration. And the important thing to understand is that you're right. Committing a huge amount of the nation's resources to dealing with an economic crisis is a risk, right? But you're not going to take this risk, really. You're going to be the party that says, "We're going to manage the crisis. We're not going to try and get out of it. We're not going to go so big that we might actually." Save things. We're gonna nickel and dime it, just like we did the last stimulus. Although that wasn't all Obama's fault. That was also compromises with Republicans. And what we did by the way, with the economic challenges of 1993, 1994, where Clinton, you know, erred in so many ways on the wrong side of a host of choices. You know, the bottom line is that Democrats have to go big in this moment. They have to try. If it doesn't work, right, the answer isn't to then say, oh, well, I guess that was the wrong strategy. I guess Larry Summers is right, because Larry Summers is always wrong. No, then the answer is to go bigger even than that, right? Because the fact of the matter is we went huge in 2009, 2008, 2009 to bail out the banks, right? We went huge to bail out, you know, multinational corporations. And we failed to bail out people who were in a bad situation as regards their mortgages and unemployed and in very difficult circumstances. We didn't do enough for them. What happened? Well, look at the politics of 2010 and going forward. There's no question that when Democrats go small, they are rewarded with political defeat and division and challenges that make it harder for them to hold power and to do good things in the future. So what Summers is not putting into the calculus is the very real prospect that if Democrats don't go big on minimum wage, on $2,000 checks, on all the things that are popular and that people need, then they won't ever be able to get to infrastructure.
Well,
they
you know what I
do any of the things they want to do.
Yeah, let me conclude by saying today, I just when I need advice on something like this, I just go to Jim Justice from West Virginia.
Of all people, but go you're big. Right.
Listen, he's a superstar right now. Not only is he the most effective governor in the country as far as delivering the COVID vaccine and putting it in arms, but he is putting pressure on Joe Manchin to do the right thing. And Jim Justice is not a dumb man. Jim Justice is from the state. He's from the state of Robert Byrd.
Yeah. Right? Also, he's from big business, right? Because they always say govern like a business. Do you not know one of the realities of business? If you're a manager who says, I just don't want to, I don't want to spend that extra 15 cents, right? And you have the potential to do something really big, you're ultimately going to get fired, right? Because, you know, investors and CEOs don't want kind of go small, nickel and dime characters around. They want to go big and try and get bigger. That's the truth of business, I guess. And one of the subtleties of it is that Jim Justice, one of the truest things Jim Justice said was in an interview with the New York Times where he said, if we spend a few dollars on the wrong thing, if we get a few dollars more to somebody that didn't actually need it, that's a lot less harm than if we don't spend enough on the right thing, if we don't get enough to the people that do need it.
John Nichols from the Capital Times, thanks for coming on today. Thanks. Another edition of SlysOffice.com.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.